take it back. Just wait and see. Don't tread on me. I won't sit back, stand idly by. Watch the heart of my nation die. Oh, not me. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on my father. Don't tread on my guts. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I damn sure fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Come, gonna take a stand. Spread these words all across the land. From sea to sea, don't tread on me. So tell your neighbors, tell all your friends. Gonna see that eagle flying high again. You better believe, don't tread on me. Don't tread on my Bible. Don't tread on my guns. Don't you tread on my faith in God's only son. Don't tread on me. Don't tread on me. Better leave me alone, cause I wanna be free. And I'll dance your fight for my liberty. I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me. Yeah, I'm telling you, brother, don't tread on me.
Everybody, welcome back into the show on this Friday, October 20th, 2023 edition. Your Defending Fathers with Chuck and Randy Bishop here on the Patriot Voice Radio Network. Joining us on the line, as usual, in the second hour is Pastor Rusty Chatfield. He's got a topic for us today. The Whiskey Rebellion, 1791 to 1794. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Randy. Good morning, listeners out there in Radio Land.
Yes, and... Yeah, and you even like saying that on church service on Sunday mornings when you do the station ID, and it was funny, your congregation's response when you said it, they all cheered you. You did a great job. Great read on that text message.
Actually, actually, I've got that thing taped to the pulpit exactly the way you wanted me to say it, in different spots, so that I don't forget exactly how I'm supposed to say it.
Well, I got three people. And this is how critical they are of the station, the show, you, me, Sunday morning church services, that they were, you know, intending on filing complaints with the FCC because we're not following their regulations regarding station ID breaks. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to send this to Pat Chatfield and have him do it right out of the gate. And kind of halfway sarcastically, the way you did it was excellent. And they texted me back and they said, well, it's about time he starts following the rules. And it's like, you know what? Have a nice day. Why don't you consider going and telling him in person how you feel? And I can't say what they said back. But anyway, you know, one thing that I find very interesting, this timeline that you're talking about, 1791 to 1794, I mean, we've already had the Constitution ratified. We amended it at the beginning of 1791, or actually December that year. But this falls into the timeline right about the time that there was still some I guess you would say newness going on to the country, how we were going to operate the federal government in relationship to the colonies, to the states, and kind of an interesting timeline, 1791 to 1794.
Right, exactly. This is it. Listen, even to this day, 2023, it is still America, United States of America, is still somewhat of an experiment in the sense that can a Republican form of government, a constitutional republic, can it survive? And the question is still somewhat open. It was definitely open during the Civil War, and it was definitely open right at this time. George Washington is president, and he gathers together in his cabinet the smartest men he knew. He had Alexander Hamilton was the Secretary of the Treasury. Thomas Jefferson was the Secretary of State. And in his cabinet was kind of the beginning of political parties and different ideas of how government was to work. I mean, we just went over the Constitution again in my junior high class, and it's a very short document. I mean, you can read the Constitution in an hour easily, carefully. It's short. The Constitution is short as compared to, say, the Michigan Constitution, which is very long, and in my view, way too long. But nevertheless, whatever. But how are things going to work? Can a free people actually govern themselves? The first thing that hit us was we had all these war debts. We borrowed money from France, from the Netherlands, and from ourselves to pay for the Revolutionary War, and we still had not gotten out of debt. There were two visions here. How are we going to get out of debt? That's what prompted the whiskey tax.
Very good. Great spot for a short break. A word from our sponsors. He's Pastor Chatfield. I'm Trucker Randy. We're your defending fathers. We'll be right back.
And now this from Northern Michigan RV.
Hi, I'm Tony Kessering from Northern Michigan RV in Galen. Get ready for a new adventure with help from Northern Michigan RV. We sell everything from pop-ups and truck campers to luxury fifth wheels, and we have everything to keep you going, including parts, full service, and even propane. And we're open year-round. Don't buy anywhere before stopping into Northern Michigan RV. Off 32 on Expressway Court behind Walgreens and Gaylord. Online at northernmichiganrv.com. Get ready for a new adventure at Northern Michigan RV.
Hi, this is Ian Murphy from the Iron Pig Smokehouse in downtown Gaylord. Join me every Tuesday at 10 a.m. with Trucker Randy for an update on all things happening at the Iron Pig. We're open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. Order online for takeout at ironpigsmoke.com. And be sure to keep up with our legal battle against Whipper, Nestle, and the Health Department by subscribing to our podcast at murphyslawdcast.com.
The Well Connect end-of-the-year blowout sale is here. A factory-direct, do-it-yourself install package is now available to our listeners. Call 231-420-8320 to find out how you can buy a Well Connect geothermal unit at a DIY discounted price. Install it yourself and qualify for a 30% federal income tax credit off your 2023 taxes. Additionally, you'll receive a cash rebate from your local electric co-op company. A Well Connect uses your well water to do 80% to 90% of heating your home this winter, 100% air conditioning your home next summer, just by calling 231-420-8320. Again, save money, get a 30% federal income tax credit before the end of this year, and start saving money every month while enjoying total year-round comfort. Again, call 231-420-8320. Do it today.
If you are a PIE&G electric customer, call and get on the PIE&G Connect Express today. Call 800-423-6634 to get connected to the best, fastest, most reliable fiber internet connection in northern Michigan. Faster than Frontier, speedier than Sunrise, all at an affordable price. So call them today at 800-423-6634 and get on the PIE&G Connect internet train. All aboard!
Everybody, welcome back into the show. Second segment, and I understand from ABC News reporting in that there is a third vote going on right now in the U.S. House of Representatives in that chamber for Jim Jordan. He's called for a third vote. He met with all 22 of the holdouts yesterday, and reports were reported by ABC News, whether we believe this or not, that they met with Jim Jordan and that they felt that he did not change their minds. The plan to put up Patrick McHenry from North Carolina failed as a temporary speaker to get things moving on certain legislation that must be passed. and dealing with Israel, the debt, all kinds of things. So kind of interesting going on in the background. I'm monitoring Newsmax and be giving reports throughout the rest of this show, see how this third vote goes. But these 22 holdouts passed Chatfield saying not only did they not agree to Patrick McHenry as temporary speaker, but Jim Jordan didn't change their minds or change their vote for him. Jordan's reported of saying they'll stay in Washington and he'll continue holding rounds of votes over the weekend until this gets done. So kind of an interesting dynamic happening simultaneously with your history lesson.
Very good. All right. And is there a connection, you ask? Well, somewhat distance, but there's a connection of things going all around the world here. Okay, so we have a country. We have a constitution. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution says, the Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises to pay the debts and provide for the common defense and general welfare of the United States. We had a war debt. And especially the Federalist, led by Alexander Hamilton, Secretary of the Treasury, says we have to pay off our debts. Plus the fact he pushed through a law, Washington did, in the Federalist, that basically said that the federal government would assume all the war debts of the states. Obviously, before we became a country, before the Constitution, we were the United States. But under the Articles of Confederation, we had no power to tax. The federal government during the war really, in a sense, didn't exist. We were just a collection of 13 colonies trying to win their independence from Great Britain. And so a lot of states took out loans to help with the Revolutionary War. Some of the southern states had already paid their debts off. Some of the northern states did not. Hamilton wanted the federal government to assume all the debts of the states. He wanted to make the central government more powerful. A lot of the southern states didn't like that, and the compromise that happened was instead of having the capital be in Philadelphia, we'd move it south to a border between Virginia and Maryland, called the District of Columbia, named after Columbus, Washington, D.C., Washington, District of Columbia. That was kind of a compromise. But now we had to find some way to raise the money to pay off the debts. Now, this whole thing, the whiskey tax, this is Hamilton's brainchild. And as I look back at it historically, it wasn't a good tax. It was a bad tax. What it did was it taxed specifically whiskey, and believe it or not, we drank a lot of whiskey in this country at the beginning. George Washington himself distilled a lot of whiskey. So you had a lot of farmers, and especially in western Pennsylvania, that had huge farms, and they had a lot of different grains, rye, barley, wheat, but they didn't really have a way to transport it to the markets to sell it. So whenever they had excess grain, they would distill it into whiskey. And almost every small farm had a distillery to turn their excess grain into whiskey. And that's what they did. I'm not advocating people to drink whiskey, but nevertheless, that's just the historical fact. And so Hamilton said, well, we should tax these distilleries. We could either tax it per distillery, or we could tax it by the gallon. The problem was there were a lot of distilleries back east that were big, and there was a lot of big distilleries, and they could produce whiskey way more cheaply. And whether you taxed it by the gallon or you taxed it by the distillery, this tax really hurt small farmers. In other words, if you're just a small farmer and you had to pay the same amount of tax for your distillery as some Easterner did, it was just, in their view, ridiculous. Plus the fact there wasn't a lot of money out there. There was not a lot of coins. And whiskey was used for barter as a means of trade. I'll buy your cow for 2 gallons of whiskey or whatever.
Right.
And whiskey would keep, whereas other things wouldn't keep. So there was a lot of farmers who I think I can say rightly so, were saying, this is way, this is killing us. And eventually they started to say, we're not going to pay these taxes. And they started to rebel against it. And the Washington administration sent out tax collectors that were going to try to collect the taxes. There were a few of them whose houses were burned, and some of them were tarred and feathered, and there was a kind of an open rebellion against the tax. To their view, this was taxation without representation, or at least local representation. And I think I can say the whiskey tax was an unfair tax. I mean, you're going to tax a small farmer in Western Pennsylvania that produced just a few gallons of whiskey per year the same way you'd tax a distillery back east in Philadelphia. I can say that it wasn't a fair tax, and it was really hurting small farmers. So what had happened is they started to organize themselves in Western Pennsylvania and started to resist the taxes. They simply wouldn't pay it. Now, in the end, four people died in this rebellion. Four people died. But it came to the point, and Washington was trying to negotiate with the rebels. Okay, what do you want?
Right.
But Alexander Hamilton, he was the driving force, first of all, the tax, and he wanted to make these Western Pennsylvania farmers, he wanted to make them an example that the federal government is supreme and you are going to buckle under. And so he was pushing Washington, and Washington was negotiating. But eventually Washington says, okay, my tax collectors are getting tarred and feathered. You burn somebody's house down. He raised an army of 13,000 men, and he led it himself. Says the law must be respected. Okay, so he comes out there with 13,000 men, and by the time he gets there, the rebels, there were about 500 rebels that had organized themselves. Most of them had fled. It's interesting. I find it interesting that the leadership especially fled. The leader of this rebellion, a guy named David Bradford, he fled west into the mountains. And most of the leadership fled west. And there was only a handful of men left there, and they arrested them. They arrested 150 men. Okay, let me back up and say, it was anticlimactic. 13,000 men show up, and there's just a handful of men that stood there. They didn't know what to do. 150 were arrested. Only about 20 were ever tried, and only two were convicted. And those that were convicted, they were condemned as traitors, a guy named Philip Weigel and John Mitchell. But then George Washington gave them a full pardon and said, you know, let's not make an example of them. And by the way, there was a battle here between Alexander Hamilton and Washington. Thank goodness that Washington was a little bit more understanding. Here's what he said concerning the rebels in the whole whiskey rebellion. He said, "The misled have abandoned their errors. For though I shall always think it a sacred duty to exercise with firmness and energy the constitutional powers with which I am vested, it appears to me no less consistent with the public good than it is with my personal feelings to mingle in the operations of government every degree of moderation and tenderness with the national justice, dignity, and safety may permit." In other words, he took serious, George Washington, his what the Constitution said concerning the president, and I'll read this to you, Article 2, Section 3 of our Constitution, concerning the president: "He shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed." There was a whiskey tax. It had to be collected, and he had to enforce the laws. But he also had a pardon power. He wasn't going to execute these guys, whereas Alexander Hamilton was going to he thought he was going to come with – he almost wanted a battle and put down the rebels and then have a trial and execute the rebels and hang them or whatever.
Right.
Thank goodness that Washington said, look, let's show some wisdom here. Now, there was a political guys like Thomas Jefferson were opposed to the whiskey tax to begin with. He could see this coming. He said this is a bad tax. It was a bad decision to tax it. It was a bad decision to try to enforce it. We're going to repeal it. So after he was elected president in 1800, by 1802, the whiskey tax was repealed. And we never had another excise tax like the whiskey tax until the Civil War.
Civil War, and this is important to realize, because in 1860, you know, the breakout of the Civil War, that was a completely different justification. That was to fund the war, basically, to keep the states from, you know, leaving the Union, keeping the country together. This is majorly different than the whiskey tax that they passed.
Yeah. Yes, the whiskey tax, I think, was unwise to begin with.
Yeah.
And I think and by the way, this helped solidify the division of our country into political parties. Remember, George Washington didn't like that development. The one thing he didn't see coming, a very wise, great president, in my view, George Washington, he didn't like what he called the spirit of party. Because he could see Hamilton and Jefferson arguing, and he didn't like it. And he said, hey, his attitude was, hey, we're men of different ideas, but let's make our points, let's make our arguments, let's not form parties. But the formation of political parties is just inevitable. It's built into human nature. When you start advocating, as Jefferson did, that more power to the states, more of a democratic, small d, country, a more rural country, you know, people that think like you and whose interests you represent are going to side with you. Whereas Hamilton envisioned the country as being more economic, financial, powerful, more built on business and banks, and he wanted to create the national bank. There was just a long-standing difference of opinion. And this whiskey tax and what we call the whiskey rebellion helped solidify that. And I do think the whiskey tax was a bad decision.
So, so on that point, you're saying this actually created the Republican-Democrat Party, I mean the two-party system, the three-party, the five-party, whatever it was at the time. This is where people felt they needed to stand together and organize as a party politically.
Right. Now, let me just tell you something about our system of government. It's called the presidential system of government, the way our Constitution is set up, unlike a parliamentary system of government. Our system creates, just by the very system itself, a two-party system. When you have three parties, it remember the election of 1912 when Teddy Roosevelt formed the Bull Moose Party, the Progressive Party, which split the Republican Party and turned the country over to the Democrats and Woodrow Wilson. You create another party, it's a prescription to give it to the other side. And all parties kind of – you just got to see that. That's the nature of our system. Unlike in Great Britain or in Israel, let's say, they have many different parties, and they have parties – align themselves with other parties to form a government, and things are very fluid like that. But when you can't get the party together, boy, you got big trouble. And the United States House of Representatives, that's the issue right now.
Yep, the third vote is underway in Washington, D.C. Bomb the Hour News Break. We'll be right back.
Michigan.